Hello and welcome to the Innovation Agency podcast with me, Caroline Kenyon. In this episode, we're going to hear about a really fabulous programme of work being carried out by musicians in New York and Liverpool, among other places, to improve mental health and well-being. We will learn about the Lullaby Project, delivered by Carnegie Hall, with musicians working with new mums to compose and sing lullabies. And we'll hear about the work of a UK charity, Live Music Now, in connecting musicians with people in a range of care and community settings, including Alderhay Children's Hospital. Research tells us that 80% of our brain development happens in the first 3 years of life. So what happens at this time has a profound impact on the rest of our lives. In New York, the famous Carnegie Hall delivers the Lullaby Project. It's a fairly simple but amazingly successful concept, which has had a big impact on families, not just in New York, but around the world, through working with international partners. And now they're connecting with healthcare organisations in the Northwest Coast, which is very exciting. With me are Lullaby Project Director Tiffany Ortiz and musician Emily Egan. Hello, Tiffany and Emily.
Hi, Caroline. Nice to be here.
Hi, thank you for having us.
And from closer to home, I'm joined by Karen Irwin of Live Music Now and Pip Bryan, who's a musician working with young patients at Alderhay Children's Hospital in Liverpool. Welcome, Karen and Pip.
Hello.
Hiya, thanks for having us.
It's great to have you. Thank you for joining the podcast. We're going to hear more about Live Music Now and what Pip's doing at Alderhay in a few minutes. But first, Tiffany, please can you tell us about Lullaby? How did it start and why did it start?
Well, the Lullaby Project, as you mentioned, is a really simple project. We pair families with professional musicians, teaching artists to write personal lullabies. And it started in 2011 through a partnership that we had with a local public hospital in New York City in the Bronx. Jacoby Medical Center was a longstanding partner of ours. We were throwing concerts and various music workshops. But after an event, the OB nurses and staff approached us and said, well, what would it look like to provide a songwriting workshop with the young mothers that we're working with at the hospital? Now, they had a program called Link to Care, working with young teenage mothers. And many of those mothers were experiencing a great deal of stress as they transitioned into motherhood, stigma with being a young mother. And that was impacting that transition process for them, but also the connection between them and their children. And so they really wondered what role music could play. And in collaboration with the hospital, Carnegie Hall teaching artists and staff and staff at the hospital got together and devised this program. And we piloted the work at Jacoby Medical Center again in 2011 with a very small group of these young mothers. And it was just an amazing experience. Emily Egan, who you'll hear from, was part of that initial group. And now the project has expanded to reach communities across New York City and now around the world. So we work in a range of settings, from healthcare centers, hospitals, clinics, but also homeless shelters, high schools, foster care, correctional facilities, and other community centers.
And what impact does it have? I know that's quite a big question, but why does it work with mothers and, of course, with the staff in the hospitals and other settings?
Well, it's now expanding to reach parents more broadly, so mothers and fathers. And what we've done is work collaboratively with an organization called Wolf Brown to evaluate the impact of this work. For a few years, we did studies of the impact and primarily on well-being. So Denny Palmer Wolf at Wolf Brown was really looking through Seligman's PERMA framework at how this lullaby writing could impact the well-being of the family unit, the parents, the children involved, and also the community center more largely. And what we found is that this act of creative songwriting has a real positive impact of change over time, that it can impact a parent's sense of creative agency, their sense of well-being, their connection to other families, you know, a sense of support network. But it's also impacting, again, the relationships that they have with the communities. So when we were working specifically in healthcare centers, you know, one of the things that the staff would report out is the patients feeling more at home within healthcare, trusting, you know, trust is such a big part of this work, the trust between the teaching artists and the parents as they're working together. And that impacts the trust that they have for the communities that are supporting these families. And so it really does shift and shape the community environment. Suddenly you have a musical hospital that enters these various crevices of the work that's happening there. And even staff have gotten involved in writing their own lullabies and sharing that with families. So we really do see a range of impact. And also, you know, the use of language in these lullabies, figurative language, poetic languages and phrases, you know, the culture that parents bring to these songs and their own personal languages, that gets passed down to the child. And that can really support the child's early development in those very, very early stages of life.
And what do you know about the impact on the baby and the young child? How does it help the health of the baby working with mums in this way?
Well, what we primarily think about is the well-being of the parent and how that can impact the well-being of the child and that relationship, that connection that they have with one another. Many of the families that we are working with are dealing with quite a bit of stress in their lives. And as we know, high levels of stress can impact you know, the day-to-day and how families cope through that stress. And that gets passed down to the child, right? So as stress accumulates, that can get passed down to the child. So the role that music can play is in really mitigating that stress and really celebrating and honoring that sense of creative parenting that all of these communities have and that they want to pass down to their children. And so by creating that a bed for well-being through music making and creative capacities, that does impact the child's well-being. And again, there's also implications around language development and fostering that very early learning stage.
Emily, when you go in and you do a session with parents, what does that look like? How does it work?
That's a great question. It's different every time, but it depends. If we're going into a hospital setting, which was the kind of setting that we were first in at Jacoby, we always say it starts as soon as you walk in the room. So even before we're actually in a circle sitting down making music, we're just introducing ourselves and talking to people. And that's really a thrill, just because for a lot of artists coming in, it's one of the first times they've really encountered these kind of environments, and it's so fun to meet all the families. And then when we sit down, there's usually a moment when we try to do some kind of get to know you game or group singing. I'm also a singing teacher as well as a performer, and I kind of try to draw on those skills to encourage this idea that you just dive in and you can make silly noises, you can move your body, do kinds of things to make singing feel less scary. Because one of the things that really helps the Lullaby Project is when parents feel free to use their own voices. Even though we, as the artists coming in, are helping make the songs happen, we want them to feel like it's really theirs. So I like to start by a little bit of chatting about parenting and music people love, and then a little bit of singing. And then once we're in the closer into the idea of writing a lullaby, we have workbooks, which people use to write their ideas and thoughts about lullabies, and that helps them create some kind of written brainstorm, basically, about whatever we've decided that we want to encourage people to write about. Usually it's something about their hopes and dreams and wishes for the child. And that's a really nice topic for us in lullaby, because on one sense, it's kind of what lullabies are about. You're putting a baby to bed and they're going to dream, but it's also embedding this much bigger piece about what you dream long-term for your child and what your aspirations are in your own life that you're bringing to bear. So we get to this really rich territory right away, which is really thrilling. And that free writing becomes the basis for developing lyrics that we then start creating music for. So that's kind of how we begin. It's a little different every time. If we're working one-on-one, we might spend 10 minutes chatting about how the baby's doing. You know, there's all different ways, and just to make the connection and really feel like the song is coming from the parent in a space that they feel safe in.
And presumably they choose the sort of music they want. It could be rap or classical or anything, presumably. You're led in the sense of the sort of music as well as of the words they might put in there.
Absolutely. That's such a fun part. And there's all different ways to kind of find the point of entry to make the parents really excited about the music of the song. Sometimes we talk about their musical taste and they say, you know, this is going to sound crazy, even though it's a lullaby. I would really like this to be a dance party, you know, and then we listen to some dance music. We think about a beat and that becomes the germ of the song. Other times the music really comes from the lyrics themselves. There might be just a little line that feels particularly ready to be sung, and we find a tune that goes with it. The parent might feel a shape of a line, or they're rocking the baby and they'll come up with the music from it. And that I always feel like it's like as soon as you find your one way in, then you're in the song. So there's this kind of magical turning point where, I mean, even I, as the artist, having done this now for 8.5 years, there's a moment when I think, is this going to happen? And it always does. There's always a way to find that spot. And then what's beautiful is the song really feels like it came from the parent's inspiration. No matter what the participating artist is doing to add to it, we always remember that moment when it clicked like that.
Thank you. So Karen, if I can bring you in now, you're from Live Music Now, and that's a charity in the UK set up by Yehudi Menuhin and Ian Stoutska 43 years ago. And you're also delivering interactive music programs in all sorts of settings, care homes, hospitals, special schools and community centres. How do your musicians work? Is it similar to Lullaby that you put people together to make music? Can you talk us through what you do?
Sure. So we recruit really outstanding young performers at the start of their careers, and we look to choose the ones that not only are fantastic musicians, but also have that ability to communicate and engage with a whole different range of audiences. And what we do is we give them training over 4 to 6 years in sort of additional skills to work with different types of audiences. And one of the first things that we teach our musicians or get them to explore is how they can be very flexible in their approach. So it's very much led and in response to the different audience members. So it's equipping them with different skills to be able to adapt their delivery so that they can sort of tune in and connect with whatever audience members they're working with. And it's very much about building up, just as Emily was saying, you know, a rapport and trust with whatever group they're working with. And sometimes our main audiences that we work with are generally children and young people with additional learning needs or disabilities, and also older people living with dementia. So sometimes it's not always obvious what the responses are. It can be quite hard to spot if you're meeting somebody for the first time. So you're very reliant on support staff or teachers or, you know, family members to sort of point out different responses. And then as the musicians become more experienced, then they begin to look out for these responses themselves and then, you know, adapt their approach. A lot of musicians do it intuitively, but there's also skills there to learn so that they can do it in a more formatted way. It sounds like a very similar approach, actually, that sort of that flexibility and in the moment response as well. We try to, our musicians that we recruit, they start off, you know, they've had a lot of training as performers. That's how they come to us. And for a lot of them, it opens up a whole new world of interaction and communication when they begin to sort of improvise and be more spontaneous with their music. And then, you know, they develop their music making according to how their audiences are responding. And a lot of our musicians, I bet Pip would say this as well, that it makes them much more robust as performers too, because they get all types of different responses. So they're ready for anything. And that also then helps them in their sort of more public engagement as well.
So they must have to be a bit special then. It's not just about being a good musician. They have to be particularly sensitive and empathetic to be able to work in that way, to get their pleasure from seeing people respond to the music making?
Yeah, I mean, we audition, we've got about 300 musicians on our scheme at any one time, and we audition the musicians, and we probably only take about a quarter of the musicians that, you know, come to us, because having that, you know, those musical skills and also that potential to engage and communicate and empathize, not everybody has that, and the ones that do, then it's wonderful to work with them and nurture them.
And we'll ask Pip about that in a minute, but Pip works at Alder Hey Children's Hospital in Liverpool, and I understand they do a lot of interactive music. They have, is it 9 musicians working in different programs? Why is Alder Hey doing so much with music, and what sort of things are they doing, Karen?
So Alder Hey is one of the largest children's hospitals in Europe, and they've had a music program running for over probably 12 years now. And they realized that actually it was really effective on the wards. So about 5 or 6 years ago, they got additional funding, and we developed a partnership with them to train up some of our live music now musicians to develop those skills to work in the pediatric healthcare setting. And it's been absolutely fantastic response. So we've had about 9 of our musicians now go through that training, working alongside Alder Hey's sort of musician in residence, who actually is and Live Music Now alumni musician. And, you know, it's very well received across the whole hospital. It's supported by the medical staff, play specialists, and also then families absolutely love having the musicians on board, because it's such a great distraction for the patients, but also a really positive experience, helps them to enjoy their experience of being in hospital more. And also provides a lovely activity that the whole family can join in with as well. And quite often that's hard to find, you know, something that the whole family can share in those sort of difficult and stressful situations. So Alder Hey is really, you know, it's leading the way in terms of training musicians to work in hospital settings with children. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful partnership to work with them. So Pip actually is one of the musicians who's been trained at Alder Hey as part of the Live Music Now program there, and has been working there for about 3 years now, I think. Is that right, Pip?
Pip, tell us more. Tell us what do you enjoy doing there? What are the activities you do with the children, and what is it that you enjoy about it?
Well, working at Alder Hey is completely different to any of my other work. I would say it's one of the most fulfilling things that I do with my time. It's a very unusual situation to go into to bring music to the families, where it's often a very medical, obviously, environment, and to try and change the energy and change things up in that way is really special. And like Tiffany and Emily were saying earlier, making it patient-led is one of the key things that we do, and giving, like Tiffany said, that sense of agency to the children, where they don't often have a lot of say in what they're doing or how their day is run. They can choose exactly what happens in our music sessions. So in a similar way, we often try, I know that the musician team as a whole do similar things, that, you know, we will absolutely try and find out what interests the children, what music they like. We often might use things in their room. They might have some beautiful drawings that they've done, or have their favourite toy, and perhaps we might base the session around that. It can be absolutely anything. And we try to get the whole family involved. So we don't have any sort of preconceived plans or ideas before you go in. You never know quite what's going to happen, do you? And you'll just sort of go on this exciting journey together. And that's absolutely what it feels like in every session. It's totally new, totally organic. And that's really exciting.
Can you give us an example of something you've done with one or more of the patients?
I suppose another thing that perhaps sometimes happens in sessions that is a bonus, really, is that perhaps through the music making, they might have actually a response that is also part of their recovery. Like in the ward that I work on, in the neuro rehab ward, some of the children might be at the time, you know, struggling to use maybe their left side or, you know, one of their arms, or one of the boys that I worked with prior to lockdown, he was recovering from a brain operation and had lost the use of his voice. And through our music sessions, we started to vocalize and make different sounds, and we explored sort of amplifying them in different ways, made it very playful. And it was amazing to see over the course of the different sessions that he actually started to find his voice a lot more, and by the end was using words and things like this. And so, yeah, I'd say that I try to, if possible, also work in that kind of thing or activity.
Because it's not music therapy, is it? But it's therapeutic music making, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. That's how I like to describe it. Anyway, yeah, we are, in addition to the music therapy team, we're in the Arts for Health team. So yes, in that exact way you've described, we find there are often therapeutic outcomes, you know, and it's about the patient and their family's well-being. But it's all about the music and having fun and being creative through making music together.
And you're doing some sessions on Zoom now, aren't you? And I think, Emily, you are too. How does that go? How does that work? Because you connect very much so with the patients, don't you, when you're with them in person? But you are having to do some sessions on Zoom. So what's that like?
It's obviously a very different approach, and it's it has its challenges in terms of creating music together at the same time. But in another way, it's opened up a lot of opportunities to see patients perhaps in a different light, or for some patients, I think, in their home environment. Maybe they're having their session at home, so to see them in their own environment and with their family. And, you know, in a way, by not being in the room, the family can definitely take up a bit more of a role of leading it, if you like, and things. And perhaps they might also be more relaxed in their own environment and that kind of thing. I had one really positive response from one young girl who is a selective mute, but through our sessions, she was actually, because she felt more comfortable being over Zoom, was happy to sing and sent, you know, amazing recordings of her singing in lots of different settings. So.
Isn't that amazing? Emily, what about you? What experiences have you had working?
It's so amazing to hear what Karen and Pip, what you're saying, because so much of it resonates with Lullaby, including what you just said, Pip, about it feeling so connective in a certain way to be meeting with people in their homes. And it lends this sense of like everything's okay. You know, if a child runs into the room, or if someone needs to pick up a dish and have a snack, or if there's something messy in the room, I think for Lullaby especially, it's just let us feel like, well, first of all, we're making songs that people will probably sing at home. And so there's something that fits with making a lullaby at home, where someone's baby might need to be bounced, and then that bounce turns into part of the song. Or they're talking about the stress, for example, of having to work at home and trying to take time to write this lullaby, and then that actually can become part of the lullaby. Pip, it was so interesting hearing you talk about the different challenges that the people that you work with are facing, because in lullaby too, there's so much intensity that you're experiencing as a new parent or an expecting parent, and just the vulnerability of a lullaby workshop, the process to reveal some of the really strong and even conflicting things you're feeling about motherhood, about what's changing in your life, about your own creativity and seeing it come through in the song. All of that, it's just so, there's always been so much in that, and it continues to be that way when we're on Zoom. It really does feel like you're right in the room, because you're talking about things that are so incredibly personal right away. So Zoom is one of those things that's become part of our lives, and I think in Lullaby we're all feeling like, okay, this still works. We're so grateful that this can work.
So shall we hear some music? Emily, how do you feel about playing us something just to give us a flavour of something you've worked on with perhaps one of the mums, and tell us the story behind it?
Absolutely. Tiffany and I were thinking about songs to share, and I'm really grateful to Tiffany for thinking about this one, because this song is called Looking for Messages in the Stars, and it was written at Jacobi, the place where we started the Lullaby Project, but it was written in 2016. So the young mom, Zariah, was expecting for the first time, and she brought her whole family with her, which was really amazing. It's always great in Lullaby when she had her mother, her grandmother, and her younger sister there. So in this lullaby writing session, it was a bunch of different families who were all working, and at first I was working with the family as a whole. But what kind of started to emerge is that it would be really nice for her to get a chance just to work on her own. And sometimes that happens in lullabies. There's a great dynamic family that wants to write together, but then other times there's really feels like a need for the parent to have a minute to write their own thing. And in this case, I really resonated with what she was experiencing, which was this sense of kind of transformation in becoming a mother. When we started the very first Lullaby Project, I was the artist, and I was assigned by Carnegie to be part of this project. And then it turned out that I was, by the time the project started, I was 6 months pregnant myself. So I went through the Lullaby Project not only as an artist, but as a new parent. And because I was writing songs to help demonstrate what lullabies are like, I found myself doing exactly what we would eventually be doing with the participants, which is like taking a moment when you're pregnant to think in this deeper way about what it means that this is happening and this change is happening in your life. So I really connected with Zariah because she was going through a very similar thing of just having all these sort of profound thoughts. The song has a lot of complicated imagery in it, but what it really boils down to is her feeling like the connection with her family was so strong that she wanted to keep it going. And the memory that sparked the song was her remembering being away at summer camp. So coming from New York City, she said this was one of the first times she had ever been out of the city and ever been away from her family. And she was so homesick when she was a teenager. And she said she would look at the stars while she was lying out in the field. And she would think about how her family was looking at the same stars. And she would think that that was how they were, she felt like that's how they were communicating. And so in her lines of poetry that she had written, she said, looking for messages in the stars. And that became the title of the song, and that also became this the way we got into the hook was just, I think I saw that and I saw that seems like it could be the seed of your song. And so we built this little chorus. Let me see. So before I share it, I'll say too that one of the things that happens is when you're looking for a melody, you're looking, I think, Pip, you probably identify with this, you're looking for something that feels singable and feels like it has something that someone can hum right away. It doesn't feel like a giant opera aria or something like that. So somehow we came to this little falling sound of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, which is just a little scale going down and then a little scale going up. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And those little curves of the tune, I think for both me and for Zariah, felt like it was painting the starscape. We could almost see the patterns of stars in the sky. So to me at least, this song kind of captures a lot of things at once. And I'll show you what the chorus was that came out. Let's see. It goes like this. All of the stars are like a blanket of love to hold you and guide you through the darkness above. All of the stars are like a blanket of love. You know you're not alone. You know you're not alone. So that's the chorus, and it's really about looking for those messages in the stars, which comes up in another part of the verse. And then eventually the song weaves into this beautiful idea of lineage, that she got this from her mother and her grandmother, and was going to pass it on to her daughter, this idea that you're all connected. So that's an example of what we packed into that one little lullaby. And it's a great story because she then gave birth to her daughter and she came back to the last session. So we were able to share that song when it was fully recorded with her and her family all right there. And then a couple years later, she had another baby and wrote a totally opposite kind of song called Powerhouse of Women about all of the wonderful women in her family. So so that's the story of that lullaby.
I just wondered I wonder has she shared those lullabies with her children as they've got older? Does that happen?
Tiffany, maybe you know as well, but I think a lot. They're very, it's a family that's very excited about the project, but go ahead, Tiffany.
There are a few ways in which we share and celebrate the lullabies that are written. Sometimes it's with a final sharing session with a small group of families and invited guests, singing and listening to the recordings that are made. So oftentimes we record these songs within a session on a cell phone or a recording device. And in some cases, we go to a professional recording studio and record these songs with fuller arrangements with the parents present and acting as the producers of their lullabies. Now we share those recordings online. We have a Carnegie Hall SoundCloud lullaby page where hundreds of lullabies are shared. And many of our families actually share these recordings or share the link to their SoundCloud recording with families and friends. Sometimes they have families abroad and it's a great way to share that with them. So many of our families will either share the recording, play it at home once the project is over, or sing it on their own if they're comfortable, or sing along to the track. We do encourage singing as much as possible because we know that that's really the place in which you can connect with your child by singing those messages and sharing that music. We also have concert celebrations. So at the end of the year, we tend to have a big concert celebration featuring many of the lullabies written in that given season. And Zariah and her family come the second time to writing a song, they actually perform that song on stage. And she just had an amazing time sharing that with a public audience and performing and being in the position of you know, the professional artist and being able to share what she created for her child with many, many other families in the room. And I think that was a really special moment.
Amazing. That was absolutely beautiful, Emily, and a really interesting and moving story behind it as well. So Pip, it's over to you. We'd love to hear you play something and tell us what it is and how it came about.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks very much. I'm going to share a shortened version of a piece that was written recently with a patient on my ward. The inspiration behind this piece of music was about her favourite toy, which was Dumbo. And I'm sure you can hear in the music that there's lots of sort of soaring passages where there's the sounds of Dumbo on his adventures flying through the sky. So I'm missing a couple of band members because the patient was playing on the chime bars and her mum was playing on the shaker. But I hope you enjoy it all the same.
Done. That was lovely. I could hear the music, his big ears flapping as he flew around.
Exactly what she imagined, I think.
I think it's a really sad movie, actually, but it didn't sound sad. It sounded lovely.
Thank you.
Pip often uses her flute and sings, but just because of the circumstances at the moment, you know, because of COVID-19. I mean, it's been amazing that the hospital have put all the procedures in place to have the musicians back in visiting, doing in-person sessions in their full PPE and with, you know, very well thought through, so it's very safe. But it means that they've been using more keyboards and percussion instruments instead of wind instruments and voices, and sort of having to adapt the delivery a little bit. And I was just imagining you, Pip, with your sort of portable keyboard in the room with the patient working. And I can imagine what fun they must have had with the percussion instruments as well.
Oh yeah, it was great to get the family involved. The new keyboard's got a handle on it, which has turned out to be very useful in these situations.
Go on, explain. You'll have to explain that.
Well, it's just that the new keyboard that Vicky has treated us to at the hospital has got its own handle. So, I mean, I have visions of designing a tray for it to sit on, but so that you don't need a big stand or anything, you can sort of play on the go. So it's been brilliant to use that, particularly now that I can't use my flute at the moment, as Karen was saying. But also my colleague Eleanor, she has been using an iwi in the session, which is an electronic wind instrument. So it uses the pressure of the embouchure rather than air, so she can play it with a mask on, and it's uses a little amp. Anyways, we trialled it for the first time this week and it's absolutely brilliant. So that was really good fun.
Where there's a will, there's a way, isn't it? We find our way around these obstacles, COVID. So Lullaby Project, possibly coming to the Northwest Coast, right? And I know you're already in the UK, aren't you? In London, Wales and Scotland, I think, but not in the NHS and not in the north of England. So Karen, what do you think? How's it going to work? Can you see it taking off in our region? I do hope so.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm so excited. I've heard about the Lullaby Project, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, it would just be so exciting to bring it to the Northwest, or also, you know, across all the different branches of live music now, because we work all over the UK. I think there's such great potential. And the way, you know, just hearing Emily and Tiffany talk about it, I can just see that our musicians would relish the opportunity to work with families and help them to write their own lullabies using all those skills that we're sort of training them to develop in their work in schools and in hospitals and in care homes as well. So I think we've got brilliant musicians with the right sort of attitude and with a little bit of additional training that I know Carnegie Hall would help us with. I think we've got all the resources, so we're looking for partners at the moment, and partners that would be interested, that would be able to help us identify families or programs where we could, you know, partner up and work with them. But this is all just sort of very early stages, and it's such a good opportunity at the moment to be finding out more about the Lullaby program. So yes, I'm really excited, and I know all my colleagues at Live Music Now are too. So it's just right at the start of an emerging partnership.
And of course, when you're looking for the family, sorry, Tiffany, you can help answer this as well, actually, but when you're looking for the families that you work with, you are targeting particular areas of need, aren't you, when you're delivering the programme in New York, and I'm sure that would happen in the north of England as well.
That's right. And that happens in New York City. You know, we think very critically about this work through the lens of social impact and social justice. How are we really supporting families who are most negatively impacted by social inequality? And so we're really intentional about where we bring this work and who we're supporting through this work. And internationally, we have a network of about 40 partners adapting this program within their own communities. And we really have intentional conversations with each of our partners about, you know, how this project can really support their own communities and how they might structure the project to best support their communities. And so we see a lot of variety in how the project takes shape and form. And we really encourage that. You know, what's really at the heart of this program is using this lullaby writing experience to connect with the youngest members of our society, for parents to really feel that sense of creative capacity. And, you know, whether that happens through multiple sessions or just one session, whether there's a flashy recording session or just an intimate phone recording, whether there's a big concert or not, you know, there's a lot of flexibility, but what's really at the heart is that sense of supporting our families around the world. And so when NHS approached us and said, well, can we bring Lullaby to England through healthcare? The answer was absolutely yes. You know, we have been wondering and pondering this question, what would the Lullaby experience look like if it was really an integrated part of every family's lives? whether it stemmed from different community centers or not. But we were really thinking about healthcare as the starting point, right? As you're giving birth, as you're expecting a new child in your life, what if every family wrote a lullaby? What if every child had their own lullaby? What would that look like for everyone in that hospital to have that experience within an entire healthcare system? We dream big within the Lullaby Project. And when NHS approached us, it really brought back a lot of those questions. And I think we're really excited to think about what the possibilities are in England through NHS, and in chatting with Karen about the possibilities and her amazing network of teaching artists, it seems like there's just a wonderful, wonderful community that can really support this work, and we're excited to see what might come from that.
Amazing. Emily, what were you going to say about that?
Oh, I just love what you said, Tiffany, because it hits on the idea for me that the Lullaby Project just really thrives on transformation. That it artistically too, that it, the word project feels more and more meaningful to me in a way. Like, our goal is to take this little tiny idea of a parent singing with a child and just sort of spread it around the world and see what's out there. We have so many romantic love songs in the world, but the body of songs about parent and child and family relationships, it exists, and it's existed for thousands of years, but it's these little songs that you might sing through a folk tradition passed down in the middle of the night. So the thrilling thing for me is exactly these opportunities to say, like, what's it like if you write lullabies in this environment or with these parents or in this new way? It just, the more and more that different people take it on, especially when the artists, and there's a synergy between the artists and the supporting organization about what might happen, it just, we learn so much about the experience of parenting around the world and of that particular kind of love.
Pip, what do you think about that amazing idea? Every child has their own lullaby written for them. Isn't that the most magical idea?
Absolutely. That is so inspiring to think of, like, the traditions that you're cultivating within that family of writing songs for their children and then their children writing songs for their children. I think what an amazing gift to be supporting families through that journey and to be promoting that as you say, a way to transform. And yeah, I'd say that I really like the way you use the word transforming, and I think that I'd absolutely say that working with families at Alder Hey has been very transformational for me, if that's a word, through my work in those settings in paediatric healthcare and with families in those situations. It's been really, had a big impact on me as a performer and a musician, but as a person more broadly, I'd say.
So I'm really excited. It sounds amazing. I'd love to see Lullaby take off in our part of the country, but also across the UK through live music now, because it's a national charity, national partner that we're hoping it'll be. So in a moment, we're going to be played out by that beautiful lullaby from Emily and her parent author. But for now, thank you so much for sharing your stories, Tiffany Ortiz and Emily Egan from Carnegie Hall, and Karen Owen and Pip Bryan from Live Music Now and Alder Hey Children's Hospital. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The darker the night, the brighter the beams, the farther you are, the closer they seem. 'Cause all of the stars are like a blanket of love to hold you and guide you through the darkness above. All of the stars are like a blanket of love. You know you're not alone. You know you're not alone. Looking for messages in the stars.
Wasn't that beautiful? Thanks again, Tiffany, Emily, Karen and Pip. If you'd like to find out more about the Lullaby Project or Live Music Now, links to the websites are on our podcast page. Thank you for listening.